Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Let's get to the commercials. Again, unlike Mike, I really pay attention to these. I sit down.
Yeah, they were all bad.
I grade them.
Just a waste of time.
The Woolworths commercial was the only one worth anything.
My favorite was the FedEx.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Friday then, for the second day in a row, I'm going to open by saying how happy I am to be back and happy to do this show. Makes me very happy. David Aldridge is here. Tori Clark is here. Michael Kornheiser is here, and we'll do the news. Claude is substituting for Nigel. Nigel will be out all week attending to personal business. He has our blessing and our best wishes with all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I will just start sort of soft. I had nothing to do last night. Wilbon called. I don't know when it was. Probably around 8 o'clock. Wilbon called, and he started screaming at me that Steve Kerr just doesn't like me now because I didn't have the decency to show up last night and talk to Steve Kerr because the San Francisco Warriors, Golden State Warriors. They're in San Francisco now.
They are now, but they're still Golden
State. Yeah, so whatever. You know, and I really like Kerr, and so Wilbon hung me out to dry and said, you know, he never goes anywhere. He wouldn't even go 10 blocks to see you, and on and on and on. And he said that he and Kerr were talking about politics. Steve Kerr is, as everybody knows, Steve Kerr is not a fan of the current administration. He's been very public about that.
Correct.
David knows Steve Kerr better than I do.
Tori's future husband. Don't speak ill of him.
Well, one up.
Right.
He's on the short list.
Well, Avenatti was one of your future hubbies at one point, and that didn't work.
I don't like visiting people in jail.
We all have one in our closet, right?
Right. So David knows, through Turner, David knows Steve Kerr better than I do. I have a tremendous respect for Kerr. I think he's very, very smart. He has had, I don't want to go through the whole story, he's had personal tragedy in his life. He's very smart. I think a terrific coach. Made the single, and I say this as somebody who grew up as a Knicks fan, made the single smartest decision in the history of coaching, which is, I'm not going to coach the Knicks. I'm not going to go work for Phil, even though I've worked for
Correct.
Phil.
That's right.
I'm going to go coach the Golden State Warriors, and in an hour.
I think he made the right call.
Yeah. Jim. So, and he's very politically inclined. And so Wilbon was saying how he was talking to Kerr, and they were talking about who might emerge from the Democratic Party and who might challenge Trump, and on and on and on. And I know, and I was, it pleased me that, you know, that was the nature of that conversation. I was not asked to go, invited to go, or anything like that. And Wilbon uses me as a punching bag, and that's fine. I do it to him. It's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I do. I have said this before. I am on an email chain. I'm on the Tom Friedman Sports email chain.
Uh-huh.
And every once in a while, Tom sends something that he's written that he thought I might like. And on that chain, it's a pretty small chain. There's Olin Brown, there's Steve Kerr, and there's me. And I don't think Steve Kerr knows that, but I have been told that. And as I said, I really do like Steve Kerr. So Wilbon and I talked a little bit about politics and who might win and who might run and on and on. And then it was, I don't know, it was like 8:30, and Wilbon said, you know, I'm going to go watch the Wizards. And at that point, I had nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. Nothing else to do. This is a long way of getting into the fact that I then watched the Wizards. When I dialed into the game, the Wizards were down by about 20. It was nearing the end of the third quarter, and Golden State was going to, I thought, go over 100. Mm-hmm. Go over 100.
Yeah.
Now, now you'd say Golden State, you know, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. No. They got eight guys you've never heard of, right? Eight guys.
I have one guy you've heard of.
They got Draymond Green, who you heard of.
That's it.
They got D'Angelo Russell, who didn't play.
He didn't play because he's about to be traded.
Right, because they want to make a move on him, and they got nine guys, you don't know who they are.
Exactly.
And the Wizards got their guys back.
Correct.
And they end up losing a game. And, you know, the headline, because the local coverage, I just can't slam them all the time, so instead it's not slammed ever. The local coverage is about how great Bradley Beal is. And we're going to get into that because Bradley Beal did not make the All-Star game. We're going to talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. But they're a bad team. Because Golden State's the worst team in the league.
Correct.
In the league, they just went 3,000 miles and beat this team.
They did.
Which was rested.
Correct.
Just beat them. Because this team isn't any good. Scott Brooks no longer says that the lack of defense is laughable. They give up the most points in the league. Mm-hmm. They gave up 125 last night. Was a little bit above their average.
121 is their average.
Yeah, they're wildly ahead of the next team in terms of giving up points. Mm-hmm. Scott Brooks, who used to say for 3 years in a row, this is unacceptable, and it was acceptable, doesn't even say it's unacceptable anymore.
No.
Just says something like that. And every
verbatim tone.
Yeah, and what happens is that people celebrate the scoring of Bradley Beal, and it's been tremendous lately. He's behind only Damian Lillard is like averaging 48 a game in his last 10 games, which is like it's not to be believed. Beal is averaging 39 a game. Since January 22nd. So that's what, 10 days, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And Beal's been great, but it's not enough. It's not enough. And I'm curious. This is a lost year. I guess they're trying to just grow young kids for next year when John Wall comes back, right?
Well, Tony, it's a long, long explanation. Look, it's a gap year. We all understand that. Without Wall there, there's no expectations, there's no pressure on them. But what they have consistently said is we're going to start rebuilding our culture.
How are they doing that?
Badly.
What does that mean? How are they doing it?
They had just come off a win where they had beaten Brooklyn, which had Kyrie Irving for 3.5 quarters before he got injured. And it was a really good win. They gave great effort defensively. They were active and talking and all the things you want. And then you look at the schedule, they were 3.5 going into last night, 3.5 games out of the last playoff spot.
Which is going to be won by a team under 500.
Probably.
In the East.
But that's nothing. When you look at their schedule, they've got Golden State coming up. They've got Dallas without Doncic. They've got the Knicks. They've got the Cavaliers.
You're just supposed to win them all.
You should at least win 6 out of 7
Yeah.
Going into the break and coming right out of the break. Well, they were supposed to win last night, and that's just indicative. I watched Bucknell and who did they play? I was at Bucknell and whoever they played.
Lafayette.
You know why I watched them? Because they actually tried defensively. They actually gave me effort defensively.
This team doesn't try.
Gives you no effort defensively.
No.
And they're not worthy of the people that pay money to go see them most of the time because of it. I'm not asking you to be the Pistons in 1989, I'm asking you to give a damn defensively. Give me minimal defensive effort.
So
they don't do it.
The larger issue with the Wizards centers on Bradley Beal not making the All-Star team. Bradley Beal not voted on by the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
There are 7 substitutes. There used to be more, but they have it manageable now to 12 people. And I don't believe that Bradley Beal—look, let me get my words— exactly the way I want him. Bradley Beal is an all-star caliber player. There should be no doubt in anybody's mind. He's made the team before. Mm-hmm. He is an all-star caliber player. I would not have put him on the team this year. Mm-hmm. His team stinks. If you look at it, what's he doing? If you look at the substitutes in the East, all of them are from winning teams.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one is from a winning team. Only one substitute is from a losing team in the whole deal.
Yeah,
and that's New Orleans. New Orleans has a guy.
Brandon Ingram, yeah.
Right, he's the only one. But in the East, they're mm-hmm. all from quality winning programs. So I would not have, he's all-star caliber, and he said he felt disrespected. Not only don't I think he was disrespected, I think this is the way it should have been. Your thoughts?
Well, Torrey,
and I know you like him, Bradley.
What else is he going to say?
Yeah.
He's got to say that.
Of course.
I think you're absolutely right, but he's got to say that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Would I put him on? Probably not. But I'm not, you could make a case, certainly.
Who am I kicking off?
It might kick off Adebayo, who was the second guy from Miami picked.
But playing really well.
They're on a good
and
team.
And Miami, one of the more surprising teams.
Sure, and I understand, and Steve Kerr has said this. If all things are equal, he's going to pick the guy from the winning team.
Because the assumption is you've contributed more.
That's fair. What are we doing this for if we're not going to reward people who win? Right? I get it, but I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
I got nothing for you. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm reading the news.
I did try to watch. And for the the first few minutes, you kind of go, okay.
They always come back in the fourth, and they make it within 10 points. Yeah. And then they lose.
I'd given up by that
time.
No,
but it's just, I'm so angry with them because, you know, you put yourself in a position, you've beaten good teams. It's not like.
They beat Miami.
They beat Miami, they beat Philly, they beat Boston.
They beat good teams.
They beat Oklahoma City, who's having a very good year. So this is just on you. This is on you saying, I'm not going to read the scouting report. I don't care about these guys who I don't know, and I'm not going to try.
Golden State has nothing.
Right.
No, they got nothing.
It is important to note that you actually got a decision in this game, so there's that.
Right, as opposed to Iowa, which we'll get to in a little while.
But important message, gentlemen who know these people, the next time Steve Kerr is in town,
I am available to go to the game. I am so sorry.
He's a wonderful...
I went to shoot around yesterday. I talked to him for like 15 minutes.
Wonderful, smart guy. He is. He's a great coach. He's a wonderful, smart guy. In other NBA news, which I don't usually do, but I'm going to do it a little bit, Miami at home, and Miami had a very good record at home, except that they lost last week to Boston
they
at home.
Like 15 in a row.
Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. They beat the 76ers. They didn't just beat the 76ers.
Yes, they did. They killed them.
They could C-I-L-L kill my landlord. The 76ers gave up 137 points. The 76ers are in sixth place in the East. This was a 31-point loss to Miami, and Brett Brown, their coach, I believe will be fired at the All-Star break. Oof. David?
Hey, you might be right, Tom.
Right?
I mean, that's... This is the most disappointing team in the league to me.
And Embiid and Simmons don't like each other. Well, at least Embiid is so mouthy and he's always ripping Simmons.
I don't know if they don't like each other. Well, I have always believed this. I believe that when they drafted Markelle Fultz, they made the trade for Fultz. I think Fultz and Embiid became comrades in arms because they were both rehabbing basically at the same time.
Right.
And I think they like each other and they liked each other. And I think he felt like, Embiid felt like, you know, me and Fultz are going to run this. And they brought Simmons in.
Well, because
not
Fultz,
his guy.
Right.
And it's not all that they don't like each other. It's just that they don't fit each other. They don't. I mean, it's a bad fit because Simmons can't shoot. And so the spacing on the floor is just really compromised in a lot of ways. Now, look, he's a great player still. It's amazing to me. I mean, he's still shooting like 60% from the floor, and he can't shoot. So it's all layups and, you know, stuff in the paint.
He shoots the shots he can make.
Which is great, which is smart. But I think from a team standpoint, it makes it difficult for Embiid to be at his best because I just don't think he can really operate the way he wants to operate. So it's not that it can't work, but they've got to get a guard. They have to get a point guard before the trade deadline.
Well, one of the things is this is coaching.
That's why you say
to Brett Brown, you know what, you're a nice fella, but we're going to get rid of you.
Well, but who do you bring in?
I don't know.
That's the problem.
I don't know. It's like I look at Detroit. I'm sorry. I look at Cleveland and I think, wow.
Well, that's
John Beeline. Yeah, what are you doing?
That's a train wreck.
What are you doing?
Rebuilding train wreck.
So if you think, I would say that the East has both the most disappointing and the most surprising team. And to me, Toronto's the most surprising team. Toronto lost the MVP of the playoffs, and they're 36-14.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably better now than they were last year in terms of record at the same point.
Well, this is the difference between an organization that actually has a culture.
They have a GM and a coach who know what they're doing and work together.
Canada.
No, and Canadians, who are very the nicest people in the world, as we all know. But, you know, they have an actual culture, which means they can survive the loss of someone like Kawhi Leonard.
Who was a rental for a year anyway,
sure,
and
everybody
knew it.
Understood that, but you still have people like Lowry, and you still have people like Van Vliet, people that understand what it takes to actually win basketball games in the NBA. And
which the Wizards do not.
No. Well, they know, they just don't do it,
you know,
which is what annoys me about them.
What was surprising to me, I guess I'm sort of so used to the NHL where you can trade until the playoffs begin and into the second period of the first playoff game you can trade. The NBA trading deadline is Thursday.
Yeah, well, they moved it up.
It's this Thursday. It's ahead of the All-Star game. Right. And there are five names that are likely to see someplace else. Clint Capella with Houston is likely to go somewhere else, maybe Boston. D'Angelo Russell.
Let's see, if I were the local team.
You try and get Capella.
I would offer Bertans right now.
Bertans can shoot, and he would fit with Houston.
He'd be perfect for Houston.
Yeah.
And he's an elite-level shooter, which is what they're looking for. So some package involving those two is what I would be emphasizing. And if that meant giving up the first-round pick next year, I might even do that.
So
Capella's pretty good, Tone.
Capella's good. D'Angelo Russell is a scorer.
Yep.
He's going to be moved. Kevin Love may very well be moved.
Well,
the contract.
The contract is I shouldn't say odious. It's onerous. That's the word I'm looking for.
Andre Drummond may be moved.
Same thing, because he's going to be a free agent after this year.
Okay. And in Andre Iguodala, who is scamming the world.
No, he's not. You don't want to play in Memphis.
He's being paid $17 million this year.
They agreed. They agreed to this. They said, okay, you don't want to be here. That's fine.
We'll just pay you anyway?
We'll trade you. We'll try to trade you. And they got to do it now because there's only 2 days left.
Right.
Which is when it's, that's usually when trades get done anyway. So it's not that big
a couple of people
deal.
On the Memphis team are, to me, understandably peeved.
I understand that.
At the fact that this teammate who's got
But he's not
rings,
their teammate. He never was their teammate. That's the whole point.
Why'd they acquire him?
Because they wanted to trade him for picks. That was the whole point. They got into the deal with Golden State and Brooklyn so that they could flip him for a first-round pick. They just haven't flipped him yet.
He's no longer worth a first-round
pick. Well, that's what they're finding out.
He's a 47-year-old guy.
He's 36.
Who's going to be a general manager before he's a good player again.
Well, he could help one of the L.A. teams, which is, I suspect is where he's going to wind up.
We will take a break. We will.
You really didn't have anything to talk about, did you?
Not at the beginning. Well, if I go to the NBA, it's nothing. We will come back. Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports will join us. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Calm ad. We did this yesterday. I'm intrigued by this. The copy reads like this. We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important, and that's mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with, of all people, LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm, C-A-L-M, Calm, know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. And I say this as someone who listens to relaxation tapes, so I believe in the theory and the practice of these things. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, this direct quote, allegedly, "Getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind," unquote. Again, allegedly.
What's so great about this is you don't realize that your voice is naturally falling into just a calmer pattern. Yeah. It's amazing.
Am I doing this?
Yeah. I'm about to fall asleep, Tony.
And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you will get 40% off a Calm Premium membership. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes that LeBron loves, like rain on leaves, and so much more, like sleep stories. Sleep stories sounds like something Monty Python
would have done. I was going to say, it sounds like a Woody Allen movie.
Sleep stories and meditations. Here we go. For a limited time, listeners to this high-quality podcast can join LeBron James in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at Calm, calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. Again, that's calm.com/sports40.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Am I on? Right, I wasn't on to begin with. This is a local group. This is a Whammy-nominated song, Bombay to Marrakesh, from the Whammy-nominated album Shed Your Skin by the band Color Palette, sent to us by Daniel Piotrowski in Wheaton, who was a bartender at Chatter, and he said, "It's a shame Chatter was never able to host live music shows. I could have bartended and acted as your in-house concert promoter." So this is Marrakesh to Bombay, and the Color Palette is going to play both songs today, right, Claude?
Yes.
It's very nice.
I like this.
Stop being a bartender and just do this full time, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So, Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports joins us, and this is sort of a wrap up, although Jason's season is not over because he's got to do news and he's got to take care of the draft and he's got to do all these things for CBS. But let me start with sort of the overall theme to me coming out of the Super Bowl, and it is what Troy Aikman said in live time during the game. That Patrick Mahomes is now the face of the NFL. Jason, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a football family of faces around him. I think we are seeing what maybe looked like it was starting to happen a little bit with sort of RG3. And even Andrew Luck, who was a super, you know, mobile quarterback, as ripped as he was, as much of a hawk as he was, you go back to, you know, his 40 times and just his straight athleticism and sort of the freakish nature of that. And, I mean, and Cam Newton, this sort of new wave of quarterbacks where you'd see him take, you know, one step forward and then maybe two back, and then a guy would emerge, but another guy would get hurt. And, you know, is this sustainable? Is this real? They keep coming, and they're doing it now in a way I don't think we've ever seen it before. And, I mean, Lamar Jackson's a baby. Mahomes is still a baby, right? One just turned 23. The other one's still 24. Deshaun Watson has endured his injury problems, but you know, this was you know, his healthiest season yet by far. There seems to be a growing class of quarterbacks, you know, in many cases, largely African American quarterbacks, who are doing things I don't think we've really ever seen before. Russell Wilson, I mean, he's a guy who's set a template and looks, you know, in some ways now like a trailblazer. I just think that this idea of what a quarterback looked like and what a quarterback did, and you drop back and, you know what I mean, you threw it this way, and these are the fundamentals, and, you know, this is the right way. I mean, if people are still clinging to that, you're running out of evidence for doing it. And teams increasingly now aren't just looking at it like an experiment or hoping it works. They're investing key first-round pieces, and they're trading up to get these guys who might come from an air raid or might come from a quote-unquote gimmicky system. But if you have the right evaluating eye, if you bring the right set of sort of boxes that you know need checked, if you really know what you're doing and what you're looking for, you can find people who can transform your franchise. I won't say overnight, but it's not that far from overnight.
Yeah. It's a much lesser question, but I'm sort of wondering, do you think he should have been the MVP, or would you have found a reason to go away from him?
I felt watching the game that, like, it was not a game screaming out on either side overtly for MVPs. You know, with the 49ers, I was thinking Sweeney, I mean, maybe Bosa, who made some big plays when they had the lead. And then as Kansas City started to come back, I really felt like Damian Williams, as marvelous as Mahomes was in the fourth quarter, you know, he got bailed out on some things too. And through three quarters, that's the worst game I've ever seen him play. And
yes,
by a wide margin. When he's throwing scud missiles into the ground on, you know, little three-yard hitches and little checkdowns and stuff, he was uncomfortable. He was as frustrated as I've ever seen him for as long of a period of time as I've ever seen. And he, you know, look, the fourth quarter is one for the ages, but I felt like Damian Williams kept that team in the game in a lot of ways. And without the run game and without him being the sort of safety valve as often as he was, I felt like he was, in a lot of ways, as crazy as this sounds, because he's not a quarterback, was kind of sort of their most important player until Mahomes eventually found his sea legs, and then, you know, he still had a way to put, you know, the nail in the coffin himself as well, Williams did. So I would have gone with him, honestly.
I think it was a very easy game to watch because there were not a lot of penalties called, and it moved along very nicely.
Yes,
but there were two plays that you have to wonder about the calls. One was the Kittle offensive pass interference, which ended up with 6 seconds to go at the end of the first half, where San Francisco would have gotten at least three.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was the Damian Williams touchdown. Because, I mean,
right,
my eyes are the same as everybody else's eyes, and I believe that if that play was called not a touchdown,
sure,
to begin with,
yes,
it would have been upheld as not a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts about both those plays?
Agreed on Damian Williams. I still don't understand in this day and age why there's not a chip on the, you know what I mean? Chips all the way across the goal line, chips in the pylon, chips in the ball, you know, at the nose of yep. each end of the ball. Like, you know what I mean? I was very sick over the weekend and watched a lot of Premiership soccer. And that the views you get on the replay of the VAR, you know, video yeah. assisted yeah. referee, it boggles my mind that that's not in the NFL. I just don't understand why anybody on the field has to do anything about it. You go to the booth. Here's what you know. Here's the digital display of the ball and the goal line. We should know in real time immediately what happened there. I've heard that it's coming. It's not expected for this year. I've heard maybe in 2021. That can't happen soon enough. But yeah, however that was called on the field was based on that array of yeah. replay being yeah. less than totally conclusive was how it's going to go. The Kittle thing, I mean, the arm was extended. It didn't seem to me like he was pushing off with his full strength. It seemed like he was trying to hand fight a little bit and gain an advantage. I didn't think it was near. A lot of people immediately went back to the Minnesota-New Orleans game where I felt like Rudolph absolutely gained an advantage, and that was a full-blown shove with all his force to disengage from a defender. I thought that was fairly overt, yet they didn't. I mean, it seemed like they just wanted everybody to get off the field, and we this is it. I don't know, guys. I think we all know that these things. It's kind of baked into the cake now.
Yeah.
In a long postseason, there's going to be several moments where you can't find a clear delineation on, okay, if you're calling this here, and you could, like, I get it, it's a judgment call, then why does this not look the same and that not look the same and that not look the same? And that's probably going to be part of the reason why they get out of the whole pass interference business when we get back to the owners' meetings, the same spring meeting where they declared this a one-year experiment a year ago. I very much expect them to conclude this upcoming March that you know, we tried it and we're going to do something else.
So viewers were up 1% on the Super Bowl. It was the 10th highest rated Super Bowl of all time without glamour teams. Mahomes is a glamorous player, yeah. but this is not glamour teams at this point. Very little controversy this year. Very little turmoil this year. Pretty smooth trip for the NFL this year, right?
Yeah, 2016 seems like a long time ago, certainly from the standpoint of the business of football and, you know, all the sort of off-field ramifications and the politicization. I'm sorry, I'm, like, still super overtired.
Politicization.
We got it. Of football, and plus the copper's half asleep on my chest, and there I'm like, go. Dude, I wish I was with yeah. you. Yeah, I think they've come a long way. We're looking at a situation now where they I don't want to say they may be on the cusp of a collective bargaining agreement, but there is a significant thrust toward that. And if you could secure another 10 years of labor peace, then that gives Roger Goodell such a monumental bully pulpit to take into the broadcast negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They still have barely dipped their toes into the gambling waters. And I believe there's a very real chance that this CBA will include a whole nother TV package. So, like, in other words, they won't have to take away from the volume of NBC or whoever gets the NBC package, of CBS or whoever gets the CBS package, of Fox or whoever gets the Fox package, in order to create another 17-week package, which is all the neutral site and international games that are sold to a streaming company, that you get it over the air if your team is playing in that game that week. But otherwise, you've got to have, you know, Netflix or, you know, whatever, Fios or whoever buys that package, and I expect the price of that package, you know, to be over $1 billion.
Right.
The more they start playing internationally, then that probably means they can charge more for, you know, the BBC or Sky Sports One or whoever wins the UK rights. And they're going to start dabbling in Germany more, so maybe the rights go up there as well. Now they're talking about, well, Toronto, that would be a bigger market than some of these other ones. I mean, if you take two of your lowest revenue teams over the course of the CBA and flip one to London and one to Toronto, I mean, yeah, that $25 billion in revenue doesn't sound like a pie in the sky anymore. I think it's never a bad time to own an NFL team, but it's a really monumentally good time right now.
That's such an interesting comment, given the fact that CTE exists and that players, you know, are retiring earlier and earlier and are worried about their health. 8 months ago, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, with all the CTE stuff and with the Colin Kaepernick stuff, I would have said and did say on TV, I'm not sure that owning a football team has a bright future. And Jason, you're saying it does.
I mean, what does it mean for 30 years or 20 years, and what will science continue to figure out? I'm not sure. I don't know that anybody knows.
Yeah.
Clearly, there are inherent risks associated with playing this sport, and you know, the grassroots numbers probably aren't what they were 10 years ago, but it doesn't feel like. I mean, I'm going to be at the combine.
It felt like a great year. It's it.
You know, I'm going to be at the combine in 3 weeks. There's going to be, you know, I don't know, 300 kids there and another 600 more who would, you know, do whatever they could to be there. At some point, is that pipeline not there anymore? And are we seeing colleges have to is Alabama no longer able to carry 100 kids and then another, you know, 50 kids who just want to be scout team players or whatever? If we start to see those numbers change, then, you know, perhaps that's a different scenario. But when I look at the prism of the next 15 to 20 years of this league, again, especially if they secure another decade of labor peace.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
I mean, you're going to add a playoff game in each conference. You're cutting from the preseason. You're growing these markets. You're going to have, I mean, imagine, the Panthers and the Falcons playing in Tuscaloosa in the middle of December. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's 110,000 people there. And, you know, at the same time, whatever, the Browns and the Bengals are playing at the Big House in Ann Arbor. Like, I don't know, man.
Columbus.
I just think that right now these guys are licking their chops, and I absolutely understand why. And, again, the gambling thing will be huge. They're not even taking any national sponsorships yet. You know what I mean? You're not even seeing any of that. They're still waiting it out until they feel like maybe there's some federal legislation involved with all the sports leagues that regulates things a little bit more. But, like, they see that pie in the sky. Trust me, they can almost taste it.
Let me get you out of here on this, and it's much more specific than the general things we're just talking about, and it is Andy Reid. It strikes me that Andy Reid is one of these guys who is beloved by coaches and beloved by players. You don't even hear people when they leave Andy Reid say Andy Reid's a bad guy.
Look, I think he's not a saint. You know what I mean? None of us are.
Right.
And he can be, you know, cunning, and he can be, I don't want to say cruel, but I mean, it's a cold-hearted business. You know what I mean? And he gets that, and he wants to win as badly as anybody. But he does it in a classy way. He does it in a human way. And while the end game many times is the same as Bill Belichick, the bedside manner has always been 180 degrees different. He has been an easy guy to root for, just from a human level, in a lot of ways, for a long time. And I obviously covered that division at the Post and interacted with him a lot, and always found him to be a likable guy and somebody who I would want to play for. And my view of him will always be colored by August the 5th, 2012. And I just happened to be on the campus of Lehigh University that morning. And you're sitting there and you're waiting for an early morning, you know, walkthrough. And there's, you know, guys on the field kind of huddled up, and no one really knows what's going on, and most coaches aren't on the field, and players are walking around, and, you know, with their heads down a little bit, and you could almost see as certain individuals were starting to get the news that, you know, something was going on in one of these dorms, and Garrett Reid, you know, something may have happened with Garrett Reid, and to be there and see that unfold, and to see Howie Roseman just wiped out, you know what I mean? Like, Howie Roseman looked like he had lost a child, and you know, Jeffrey Lurie, and everybody that despondent, you just got a sense that they're, you know, of sort of the family that Andy Reid had built there and how he was connected to that team and that community and that locker room, and that and to have witnessed the worst day of Andy Reid's life, and then to be able to see the pinnacle of his sporting career. Not that that in any way brings Garrett back or erases, you know, the hell that he went through there. But I'm glad he got his ring. And if you evaluated him, I think on any viable standard. I mean, the guy was already seventh in career wins before that game. You know what I mean? He'd already been to the playoffs 15 times before that game. He was already, you know, in the top five in playoff wins all time before that game. He had already gone to some significant heights with four or five different quarterbacks already before that game. He already had five, I think, of his former assistants as head coaches in the NFL right now, and four who'd been head coaches, you know, who are now in coordinating positions before that. He's a Hall of Famer, and now there's no counter-argument.
Thank you, Jason. Our best to Copper, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
It's great. It's great. We'll take a break. We will come back. Michael will do news. We'll see how that goes. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Well. You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ZipRecruiter ad, and the background of this is that Dylan Miskowitz is a real ZipRecruiter customer who used ZipRecruiter to hire for his company, Cafe El Tura. The following is a testimonial script based on his employer story. It wants me to talk about how challenging hiring is. I have no idea. I don't run a company. That's why we're looking for Dylan Miskowitz to do this. Cafe El Tura is COO. I guess that's Chief Operating Officer,
correct.
COO. Dylan Miskowitz experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company.
Director of coffee?
Director of coffee. That, okay. That's posted.
DOC.
Yeah, the old DOC. But when then he switched to ZipRecruiter, he saw an immediate difference. And you can, too, by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And its technology identifies people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates faster. In fact, after posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan said he was amazed by how quickly great candidates were applying, and he found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. You can try ZipRecruiter for free at this particular web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony, T-O-N-Y.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Color Palette. That is the name of the band. The front man on it is Jay Niemeyer on guitar and vocals. This is sent to us by Daniel Piotrowski. I think I pronounced that correctly. Who calls himself or has been called Superfan Dan, which is
okay.
Nice. This is called Sunburn. This music is very beautiful.
Who is on guitar again? Jay?
Jay Niemeyer. Do you
I know
him?
Jay Niemeyer.
From where?
He went to school local. He went to Field.
They're from the DMV.
Yeah. Oh, he went to West Middle School.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
I
how wonderful.
Niemeyer was the head of the ROTC at Faber.
That's Niedermeyer.
Oh, sorry.
Niedermeyer dead. Wow. So if people like Color Palette
what
want to send in their music, what do you...
Send us your music by emailing jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
You think that's a small world thing? I was in the elevator yesterday when Dr. Jeremy Orchin's alpha son, Jonathan, but the other son... said, say hi to Michael for me.
Dr. Orchin, his dad, my orthodontist.
Everybody's orthodontist.
The orthodontist to everyone from this pocket of D.C.
Right.
Still
right.
Getting it done.
Right. So, anyway, that's very lovely. News, go ahead.
Yeah, let's see how it goes, Dad. That's a nice challenge. I'd like to start by shouting out to Tony and Carol for hosting the meeting of the families last night.
There you go.
You invited my wife over, and she was kind enough to bring the boys.
The five families all showed up last night.
Walker had a good time. And we explored the new turf. Walker took a couple divots out back, but nothing that won't fill in with the flooding
later
this week.
Yeah. Finn said, are you sure you want to do this? Because your dog is going to rip it up. And I said, yeah, we'll try it again. We'll just keep trying it. Sure. And Michael cooked hamburgers last night.
Yeah. Good. It was a bonus day where you're able to grill. Claude was able to get on play 18. So yeah, a little jealous of that. We're going to start with some tough news to hear. But we're going to start with Rush Limbaugh's announcement from yesterday. He announces on his show that he has advanced lung cancer and will have to take some time off, but will be doing the show. Currently has no symptoms, but I know you wanted to start there.
Well, I mean, Tori, you said you know Rush Limbaugh.
I used to back in the day. He worked for 41.
His body of work, his and Don Imus and Howard Stern, shows you that there's room on radio for every possible thing that you could do, and he commanded an audience of many, many millions of people and made a whole bunch of money. He tried other things. I remember when he was on ESPN, and then they let him go in a little while, and people acted surprised. And he said, what are you talking about? This is why you hired him. Mm. He did exactly what you thought he was going to do, and then it wasn't good enough. And so those things happened, but it certainly didn't bother him whatsoever. We're in a situation where Alex Trebek is dealing with personal health issues, and these are very, very famous people. Mm-hmm. And Rush Limbaugh, who's great at radio. He's great at radio. Absolutely.
As we said before the show, many people in the years predicted his demise, and he hung in there.
Wish him all the luck.
And you see the power of radio, where he says, I felt that I had to tell you, this is to his audience, because that's the kind of relationship that I feel like I have with those of you in this audience. Over the years, a lot of people have been very nice telling me how much this program has meant to them, but whatever that is, it pales in comparison to what you all have meant to me.
So, and I feel exactly the same way about doing podcast and having done radio for a long time. One of the reasons that, I mean, I tend to try to decline interviews is only because if I have news about myself, I'd like to tell it to the people who directly listen to the show and not have to go through a third party who can, you know, turn it on its side. If you know what I mean? Like to turn
I
it on
suppose,
its side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just so.
Like
anyway.
If you're planning to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, something like that. Right, I like to do it myself.
More sad news as we've learned that Willie Woods, Hall of Famer, dies at 83. D-back on the Packers, who won the first two Super Bowls. He was also the first black quarterback to play in the Pac-12 from USC and continued to break barriers as a head coach through various leagues going forward.
So he's 83 years old, and he had suffered recently from dementia. And he is on a team that the Lombardi Packers and the Knowles Steelers, I think, have produced the most Hall of Famers. The Lombardi Packers, I mean, I'm just going through a small number here because I wrote them down. Horning and Starr and Taylor and Kramer and Thurston and Davis and Wood. Mm-hmm. There's got to be more than that, probably.
Did you say Horning?
Yeah, I think there might be double digits on those guys.
They may go over 10.
Well,
Dave Robinson, I think, is in the Hall of Fame.
These are great, great players in the what most people thought of as the golden era of the NFL.
Yeah. He was a great player, local guy. And
born and raised here.
His son is a neighbor of mine.
So. Is that right?
Yep.
So okay. Well, you'll go over and you'll, offer condolences. What else do we have? When do we get to Iowa?
Why don't we go there right now? Just in time for your president's State of the Union. Who did win in Iowa? It seems like we're getting different reports this morning.
Speaking of sad.
Look.
What impeachment?
This is a clown show, bro. This is an overrated, these Iowa caucuses, the proportion of what you get from this in terms of actual delegates is totally marginal, and everybody focuses on this thing for weeks and months, and now they have and Trump's right, it's a disaster in terms of voting. You don't know now who won anything, and by the way, everybody wins and everybody loses, because even when it's announced, people go, I don't believe that now. I don't believe that. If this was true, you'd have had it last night. It's a loser. Am I wrong on this, Tori? This is your job. This is a total loser.
You're absolutely right. Even before the disaster of last night, which we really should dissect, Kathleen Madigan's a very funny comedian.
She is funny.
She was just talking about how ridiculous the Iowa caucus system is. And she goes, all right, if they're going to do this stuff in gyms, then it ought to be dodgeball. If you get hit.
You're basically picking sides
then
anyway.
You have to vote with a person that hit you.
Exactly.
It's insane. No, people speaking of dodgeball, Biden's dodged a bullet. Completely.
Absolutely. You're not. There's no losers. And Bernie Sanders can't claim to be a winner.
There's no winner. That's
Buttigieg
right.
can't claim to be really, really strong,
probably. So the momentum that I think Bernie Sanders probably would have gotten coming out of it, he doesn't get it.
But who wins? Come on.
Trump.
Rhymes with rump, yeah.
Trump wins.
Cable news gets a huge victory out of this, which is sad.
It's but an even insane, some of the smaller candidates, anyway.
No. I mean, you look at Andrew Yang, who's getting a lot of play in that 8 to 9 hour as you're trying to see where are those voters going to be moving next. Is this an actual vote? Like, if you are... How are you allowed to have a camera, a national news camera, in an auditorium where people are making this
people
choice?
People in Iowa claim that this is better because you have to declare. You know, elsewhere you go and you vote and it's private. But here you have to actually declare.
They shamed people at a college campus. They're like, look who showed up for Biden. These six lonely people.
Right. It must be said that this was done this way this time because the Bernie Sanders people demanded complete transparency at every level of the voting after 2016. In 2016, they had the results in like 7 minutes.
But what things
now they have no results. It's an
a
app
caucus
on your
leader
phone
that goes around going a one, a two.
It's
they had the app.
It's the end of Iowa. Get it out of here.
It should be out.
Get out.
David Plouffe, Obama campaign manager, said, I don't know when he said it, it was either last night or this morning, he goes, I think this is could be the end of Iowa.
It's it. But that's it. Get rid of them.
But wait, they had the app. The app didn't work. Mm-hmm. Then they had the phone calls. The phone calls didn't work. And then pieces of paper.
Yeah.
And I just imagine people wandering around with lots of slips of paper.
Again.
Just go to...
As Bryce Harper would say, this is a clown show, bro.
You should... Well, it's a clown show for a number of reasons. Biggest of which is there's about 4 black people in Iowa, and there's the black and African Americans are 25% of the Democratic electorate, and none of them are represented in the first caucus or primary. So that's
and very few in New Hampshire too.
That's the first primary tone.
Oh yeah, okay, right. And this isn't a primary. No, it's a caucus.
Whatever. To channel my inner socialist, think of the hundreds of millions of dollars people spent in the state.
Loser.
Hundreds of millions.
Loser.
People that volunteered and did all the work for months and months.
And I mean, if Trump's obviously going to say this, and I think anybody would say this. Whenever they announce this thing, everybody's going to say, I don't believe it.
Well.
I just don't believe it.
You can choose to do that. You could. I mean,
I would.
Well, that's kind of silly. I mean, they're at some point going to count the votes and get a number and put it to you.
But
you
it's know. Never going to have the impact that it would have had in the immediacy of last
night. But that doesn't mean you don't
night.
Believe it. When it comes out, it just means that it's late. That happened.
I have a hard time. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm going to have a hard time trusting any numbers they do.
I will try. It's going to be. Look,
I think they're Russian numbers.
It's okay. You choose to believe that, and we'll continue with this. With speaking of a clown show that's going on in this city right now.
What else?
It's sort of hard to transition from that. I really should have finished with that. We'll do two small stories and then get to. I know you want to talk about. Women's basketball. So Brooks Koepka, who has been very vocal and a needle in the side of the governing touring bodies, has revealed that he's not going to do in-round interviews. They've tried to bring this into the European Tour, which has been a little bit more adventurous.
He won't talk to Sanzi?
Hey, thanks, Sanzi.
He won't really talk to him?
So you saw Graham McDowell was actually penalized after doing an interview and getting a bad time. So he then is liable for a penalty stroke going forward.
That's not fair.
And he starts to say, hey, yeah, I should sort of be dealt with a little bit of leniency because I'm trying to help you here.
Right, right.
And so Koepka's basically going, I'm good.
Nah, bro.
another small story. I'm choosing to see this as the positive side, but we see that LeBron James, given the choice between 24 and 2, is going with the number 2 for the All-Star game next week after talking with his daughter. And coming out of what happened with Kobe, it has been really amazing to see everyone revolve around the hashtag girl dad idea and what it means. But just hearing him continue to speak about Kobe as a father and Kobe's transition over the last couple years, just wanted to note that. And then as well, this could be the day where we have news about Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
Happen today? Could happen.
Is
I mean,
the Dodgers.
The
Dodgers
looks like Dodgers, and you wonder. I still don't understand.
David Price could be involved in that too.
You sort of think you'd have to be, just given the Red Sox desire to get under the luxury tax threshold, and you almost want to say, why? We talked about this with the Nats forever and ever. Why do the Red Sox care that much if you're giving up a generational player, a player over the last 4 years in total wins above replacement, who only trails Mike Trout and is ahead of stalwart starting pitchers in Scherzer and Verlander, which kind of makes sense given their control over the ball. So maybe you'll get that news by the time you go to PTI.
Okay, and that would be good, because honestly, leading with the 76ers, or the Wizards, is we're not leading with the Wizards. We're not doing any show with
all
the
right.
Wizards.
And now your women's basketball. I know you wanted to get
well,
to
Well, I landed
UConn.
On this last night. I landed on this last night. I am an unabashed fan of the UConn women's basketball team. I think he's a great coach. I think he gets the best players, and they win and they win and they win and they win. Now, the last 3 or 4 years, I don't think they've they've gotten to the Final Four, but they haven't won. Right. They've beaten once, I think, by Notre Dame, once maybe by Baylor, once by South Carolina. You know, I mean, and this has happened. They got beat at home. They hadn't been beaten at home since 2013. They got pounded by Oregon.
74-56.
They got pounded. I watched some of that.
Ionescu, she's great.
And all credit to UConn, because they'll play. Yeah, they don't duck anybody, but they got pounded. And what occurred to me was, are they in that North Carolina situation this year where they just don't have the squad that they're used to having, and they're out of it? What do you think?
I don't know if they're out of it, but yeah, I mean, I think that they no longer seem to have the pick of all of the elite players.
Right.
They may get one or two, but they don't get six like they used to.
Right.
It's kind of spread out.
If I were the WNBA, I'd want this to be happening, because I'd want people to watch more women's basketball, college basketball, which, admittedly, when UConn was winning and winning and winning, I wouldn't watch. Like, no, because I know what's going to happen.
Right. But see, that's interesting, because I would watch, because I like to watch UConn. I don't know that I would watch Baylor versus
Oregon. So you like
Oregon.
Winning for winning's sake?
Well, I like dynasties, yeah. I like, yes, I do.
So it's good that you've had the dynasty, but now you're seeing how the talent disperses around the entire sport. And then you'll care about them when they move to the
WNBA. And here's where the women basketball teams and players are much, they get better every year.
What I do love about women's college basketball is, to your point, it's not just UConn. Anybody will play anybody.
They will.
They do not care. They'll play anybody.
This is not Lefty and John.
No.
No.
When you look at this storyline, this goes back to Oregon, who lost by 38 a couple years ago in the Elite Eight to this team. And then you come back now. You don't just beat them down at their home gym. Right. You have all five starters going in double figures.
Right, and they have the best player by far on the floor.
Yeah.
Oregon did.
Yeah.
So
and she came back. She could have left.
Yeah.
And she came back to play. All right. That was good.
Thanks, Dad. Nice job, Michael.
That was really good. So we'll take a break, and we will have Old Guy Radio when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. This comes out of the soundtrack of Staying Alive, right? And this is
Saturday Night Fever.
Mm-hmm. This was based on a New York Magazine story by Nick Cohn called The Tribal Rights of Saturday Night.
Right.
And this was the John Travolta star turn.
Yeah, sure.
Tony Romero?
I think that's right. It was Tony, I know.
Yeah.
I don't know if was it Romero?
He's the opening scene, he's dancing in the streets delivering two paint cans.
Right.
It's a big time movie. We're doing this because it reached number one in 1978.
78.
So that's 42 years ago. This is
still a great song.
Yes. The Bee Gees changed their entire way of singing for this album and soundtrack, and everybody saw this movie.
Yeah.
Everybody saw this movie. Mm. I'm not saying it was a great movie,
right.
But...
And do you remember you guys started wearing the white suits? People really wore the white suits.
It had a fashion influence.
Yeah.
Television had one of those, Miami Vice.
Yes, yes.
Had a great fashion influence.
One of the five best skits ever on SNL was Samurai Night Fever.
Oh, is that right?
That's great. Yeah.
Oh, that was with Belushi and Richard Pryor.
Well, it was Belushi.
Can you still do it? Can you still do it? I've never seen the sketch.
No. You can still do it. It was just him being the samurai character in this, Italian family, which was absurd but funny.
So I'm going to take just a little bit of time. Well, first of all, There's a commercial that's running now, and I want to know if anybody has seen this commercial. And that is, there's a, it's the send up. It's the Bob Seger song from Risky Business, where Tom Cruise in his underwear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a Domino's Pizza ad Domino's Pizza ad. And it tells you that you can track when the pizza is coming so that even though he's in his underpants and dancing around just like Tom Cruise, he puts on his pants as the door, as a knock on the door. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Have you seen it?
I have.
Have you seen it?
Have not.
I believe that the guy who delivers the pizza is actually the best friend of Tom Cruise in the movie Risky Business. I believe I recognize him as that guy.
Okay.
So if anybody wants
to email us, if
it's possible, he's like the guy who started the whole... Risky Business is a great
movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. That scene on the subway car?
And it holds up.
Yeah.
It's 40 years and that movie holds up.
Breaks the egg.
Yeah. It's a really good movie. Anyway, so if that's possible,
very
I'd like to know if that's
in
true.
Control.
Yeah. So the State of the Union is tonight, and I am going to write the State of the Union. This is what Donald Trump should say. This is exactly what he should say. He should go up there and he should say, the State of the Union is great. People are making more money than they made before. Democrats are clowns. I'm still here, and I'm going to be voted in tomorrow. Have a nice evening. That should be it. And if he goes on, Tori, you're in this business. If he goes on and on and on, he does it to his own detriment.
I agree completely. I don't know if he can control himself, though, in that way.
Tight, quick, just a few minutes.
Just repeat the commercial.
I don't understand. I mean, what he's got, given this whole Iowa thing, and what he's got, given the vote coming up in the Senate, why would you do anything to give anyone a chance to think you're a dope?
Because you got a big ego. Yes. You have a big ego and you want to stand up and
there's no
upside to it.
But there's no time. Like, you don't have to. Right. You can get off the stage in 5 minutes, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
The only requirement.
You don't have to. By the way, it's not a. You don't have to do it. It's not a requirement.
I thought you had to do it.
You don't have to do it. Nope.
No, it's just tradition.
So he could absolutely guarantee re-election if he said to everybody, you know what? Let's save some time on Monday night. I'm not going to do it. Just run the ad again. We're done.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would do. I would try not. Yeah, but you can't.
Okay, so let's bet. Bet. How long will he speak?
2 hours.
Oh, God. That's the loser. That's worse than Iowa.
Two hours is just the opener.
Exactly.
Oh,
That's just opening remarks.
And without prompter? Just keep going without prompter?
No. How many hats will he throw out?
Right.
We have an update for you. The delivery person in the commercial is played by Curtis Armstrong, who played Joel's friend Miles.
Tony.
And what's great is they created this.
It's great.
This is like their own proprietary technology for the pizza tracker, which is fun to use, though it is upsetting when you know the time distance between the local Domino's in your house and you're waiting outside. They got so much feedback from people who actually wanted to know when the pizza would arrive because they needed to put pants on.
it's the wonderful.
It's really upsetting to me.
It's the Tom Cruise ad. It's great. It's a really effective ad, especially when you're my age and you see, wait, that's the guy. That's the guy who was his friend. So anyway, small little things that I wanted to talk about from my trip to the Super Bowl. Two very small little things. One was incredibly flattering, and we went to play Seminole. Wilbon and Kelleher and I, with
humble
the great
Brett.
Jack Vardaman. It's not humble. With the great Jack Vardaman and the great Jimmy Dunn. And on the course that day was one of the newer members at Seminole, and everybody is aware that he's a member, and that's Larry Fitzgerald. And Larry Fitzgerald is the son of a sports writer in Minnesota.
Also named Larry Fitzgerald.
And Larry Fitzgerald, and I was surprised by this, and I'm curious. I'm speaking now in total ignorance. When they released the top 100 players of all time, I saw Brady and I saw Larry Fitzgerald. I don't know if there's any other current player on it.
I know player?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers wasn't and Drew Brees wasn't. I don't know. Maybe there was a defensive player or an offensive player.
Yeah,
but Larry Fitzgerald was on it, and I'll be honest, I was surprised by that. I know he's got numbers, but he was in one Super Bowl, never won a Super Bowl. Were you surprised that Larry Fitzgerald?
I'm not.
Because that's a big-time position.
Sure. I'm not an expert. I don't know what the criteria was. I mean, you could certainly make a case for him. you could make a case probably for a dozen other guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the numbers at that point, I think, are probably pretty similar.
Brady, you knew, was going to be out there.
Sure. Well,
and Vinatieri. Vinatieri was out there.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I mean, shocked, no. But, I mean, you could certainly...
I was a little surprised.
I'm sure there are other people you could make a case for that didn't get in.
A little surprised. Anyway, go ahead.
The Franco Harris Immaculate Reception was on that list, right? As being the play, wasn't...
Oh, certainly one of the top 10 plays.
Now, you know, the greatest thing about that, my sister Katie and I, Katie the friendly one, were at that game. We were at that game. Yeah. And it was horrible, horrible weather.
You were at that game,
and there was fog. You couldn't see 5 feet in front of you. Every single person from Pittsburgh swears that they were there and they saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was so hammered, you couldn't see anything. Anything. Yeah, she was carried out on a bench. Yeah.
Your sister was carrying
them? Everybody storms the field, and this is when they had wooden benches down the sidelines, and the crowd went nuts, and people were very happy.
So you were part of the mob that scared the referees into awarding a touchdown to the Steelers.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. Anyway, so Larry Fitzgerald is out there, and Wilbon goes over to him to talk because they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because as Wilbon will tell you, everybody lives in Arizona.
Everybody
Everybody lives in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
I went over to say hello, and Larry Fitzgerald extended his hand and said, "Hi, Mr. Kornheiser." I thought that was extraordinarily polite.
What did you expect him to say?
Tony.
Why would he say that?
Because that's my name, and everybody knows me that way. Mr. Kornheiser, that's the upbringing. That's
of course
a good upbringing.
Nice.
Yeah.
That
also
was
an
good upbringing.
Age thing. Now, how old is that, Larry Fitzgerald?
But
which one, the son or the father?
The son.
The son
is in his 30s?
Late
30s?
Yeah. Nice.
It's very nice. Mm-hmm. I would bet you that 99 out of 100 other athletes would not have done that. Mm. So I was very impressed.
Okay.
On the other hand, in the hotel where all the ESPN people stayed, well, not all. When some got a better hotel. But in the hotel where most of the ESPN people stayed, one of the people wandering around, and this is those morning shows, those 8 in the morning, 9 in the morning shows,
mm-hmm.
You can do this with football players. I'm not sure you can do this with other athletes because football players are used to this. Football is a very academic sport, very rigid sport. You go to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They call a meeting for 6 in the morning. You're there at 6 in the morning. All these guys are there.
Yeah.
They're dressed. They're ready to go.
Yeah,
you know,
they're used to being up early.
And they're used to that sort of discipline imposed upon them.
Sure.
And they don't complain about that. They don't. Mm-hmm. Other sports, maybe. Not in that sport.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Woody is there. Damian Woody's a large guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I say hello to Damian Woody, and he looks at me, he shakes my hand, he says, "Hi, Mike."
Awesome.
"Hi, Mike."
Mike.
And I said, no, I'm the white guy.
Yeah.
"Hi, Mike." So I say this to Wilbon yesterday. He says, "Everybody calls me Tony." I said, "No, they don't."
Mm-hmm.
"No, they don't." So I thought that was nice. Mm-hmm. Another thing, there's a guy who does the Get On Up show a lot. He was from Texas. He's a linebacker from Texas. I want to say his name is Manny Ocho or something like that. Something like that. He's really a big guy, and he's muscular and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd, if you saw him on television, you'd recognize him. He's fine on TV. He's fine. I'm sitting at the bar one night because I don't go out because I didn't. People say, "Did you get invited to a lot of parties?" The answer is no. I didn't get invited to any parties. And I was sitting at the bar last night. By the way, Miami Beach is 5 blocks wide.
Yes.
So in traffic in Miami Beach, you're not going anywhere.
That is correct.
You forget it. Like if you're going to go to dinner, you better go across the street from where you, right,
Why
David?
Why don't you just go to 112 like everybody else does on South Beach?
I went once to Prime Fish.
You should go to 112.
No, because Wilbon always talks about it. I could not
you
bring
got
this
it,
up.
Tony.
Miles. What's Miles',
Miles.
Last name?
I don't know. It's just Miles.
It's a money-making machine. Miles.
Been there for 20 years, Tony.
So anyway.
On South Beach.
I'm sitting at the bar. I'm actually sitting at a table near the bar. And there's a piano in the bar because at some point they've had entertainment.
Did you tickle the keys?
No, I don't know how.
You don't?
This big guy comes over and sits down and starts playing the piano.
Nice.
He starts playing the piano. To me, anybody that can play piano is godlike to me.
Absolutely.
I admire this so much. He doesn't sing. He plays a piano for about 5 or 6 minutes. I'm transfixed.
What did he play?
I don't know. Yeah. Some song.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I didn't recognize the song. I'm transfixed. He knows I'm transfixed because I stand up at one point and just look at him.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing the piano. When he's done, and maybe that's the only song he knows.
Yeah.
I don't know this. He comes over and introduces himself, says how much he likes PTI, and I say, When did you? He said, when I was in college, I taught myself to play piano.
How about that?
I wanted an outlet for all of these other things I was doing, and I taught myself to play piano. I was totally impressed with this. Totally impressed.
Did you get a name by chance?
What do you mean? His name?
The person's name.
It's. I think it's like Manny.
Oh, this is the Manny. This okay. Is, yeah, this, oh, okay. This is the guy, Manny guy. Okay.
This is a guy who was a number one pick out of Texas, a linebacker.
Okay.
Played in the league for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I was tremendously,
that's great.
Tremendously impressed by that.
Nice moment.
I really was. One other thing. Patrick Mahomes, who is the biggest star, well, Brady. But Patrick Mahomes, certainly on the rise, mm-hmm. and he's the face the league is going to sell.
Star to be.
Patrick Mahomes, I'm going to ask this directly, David. Patrick Mahomes said, unsolicited, I want to stay in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I like it in Kansas City. I want to stay in Kansas City.
Is that in Kansas or Missouri?
Well, it's technically in Missouri, Mr. President. Technically in Missouri, but at least he didn't say Colorado. He said the neighboring state.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Okay, whatever. I'm with Claire McCaskill on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So he wants to stay in Kansas City. We famously heard Kyrie Irving say, if you'll have me, I'll stay in Boston five teams ago.
Yeah.
Or whatever that was. But I bring this up because Antetokounmpo is, if he wins a championship, he's the comparable face of the NBA or one
sure,
of.
Sure, sure.
One of.
And still he's, LeBron's league, but yeah, understand, yes.
Right.
And
well, it's
Curry.
The Brady's league.
You yes, know what I mean? Correct.
Yeah, so
correct.
That's what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean.
You mean, would he leave?
Would he leave? Would he leave to, for example, not just consider New York or Los Angeles, consider Dallas,
no,
where so many European players are?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that he wouldn't. I don't know that he would necessarily. Everybody thinks they're going to get him. Miami thinks they're going to get him. Golden State thinks they're going to get him. Dallas thinks they're going to get him. Everybody thinks the assumption, this is part of what bothers me about the NBA right now, is the assumption is just automatically that he's going to
he's
leave.
He's going to leave.
Because why would you stay in Milwaukee?
But maybe, here's Patrick Mahomes.
Maybe he likes it in Milwaukee.
Patrick, Kansas City is one of the smaller, if not sure. smallest, it's probably sure. in the bottom five.
Great city, though.
Understandably, but if you are looking for a larger
everybody's
stage.
Everybody's not looking. That's right. The whole point. You assign these motives to everybody because one person does it or one another person
not
does
everybody
it.
Is LeBron.
No, right. Everybody's not LeBron. And even LeBron went back to Cleveland from Miami. So, I mean.
To win and then to leave.
Well, sure, but he did right. go back.
That's right.
So
that's right.
He could have stayed in Miami as the rest right. of his career.
But Antetokounmpo can't go back to Athens.
No. But I'm saying he can no, stay in Milwaukee.
Right, he could.
He likes Milwaukee. You know, they drafted him when nobody else drafted him. Loyalty does matter still to some people, you know, and people that
what
took
is
it.
What's your best guess?
I don't know, Tony. That's the whole point. Yeah. Why are we, this whole rampant speculation a year and a half before he becomes a free agent.
The reason
insane.
I bring it up is because of what Patrick Mahomes did, which I found wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I like it here. This is where I want to be. Like it here.
It's different in football because you don't have to live there in, you know, it's not a 9-month season. You don't have to live there in the offseason if you don't want to.
And also the spotlight will find you because
right.
football has far fewer stars.
I mean, there's almost nobody who plays for the Packers that actually lives in Green Bay year-round. There's almost nobody.
Right.
I'm sure there's two or three, but most people leave.
And Aaron Rodgers, to that point, is a huge star.
Right, and everybody understands that. Nobody holds it against them, you know, but that's the unique nature of football. Says not as many games.
All right, that's it. That's all I wanted
nice.
To say.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So we'll get out of here and we will have email and a jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Dr. Hoffa's mailbag. Gonna read some.
My thanks to Jay Covington in Ellerbe, North Carolina, for a spirited, absolutely
nice.
Spirited mailbag thing. That makes me very happy. It is mailbag time. Before we get to that, let me thank Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports for coming on today. Let me thank the sponsors today, Calm and Calm.com and ZipRecruiter. Don't forget you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Here is from Shad. Here is a haiku for tax assistance. Worrisome taxes? Frightening IRS calls? Better call Dennis. 1-800-RIP-PHIL, because remember, Phil's legally dead, fell off a boat. I go by Dennis now. Solari. From Jeff Piggott in Iowa. Two questions regarding, he's in Iowa, Jeff Piggott. He knows this is a clown show. Two questions regarding the Honda parked on your street. One, does it have cloth seats? Two, are there jugs of orange juice near the trunk? I will hang up and listen. An old-time Andy Poley reference. This is great. From Eric, 39, in Nashville, Tennessee. I know the Super Bowl was very good, but there will be another one next year. I had to know how Mr. Tony celebrated 02-02-2020, the 33rd day of the year with 333 days left. Wow, we won't see a date like that again for 101 years.
That's great.
It gets better.
Wow, that's great.
And was it true, I'm sorry, that Andy Reid won his 222nd game?
Yes.
On? Wow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. From Robert Colpin. Is this our guy?
The Rob Colpin.
Rob Colpin? Yeah. The Google Assistant ad was by far the most memorable to me. It's 2 years ago tomorrow that my mom passed away, so it hit especially home for me. I obviously didn't make it all the way through. Mm. The ad for the beer that said every six-pack bought, they would reclaim 6 square feet of farmland to make it organic. He liked that. And P&G definitely spent the most money. Yeah, Procter & Gamble spent all this money on an unworthy Tide ads. I didn't like them, didn't understand them. Just loved the self-park ad, though. God, I love that. Regarding Dean Michael Lamb's email about being in front of Carville and Madeline, wait, you're listening in on a Carville conversation and you need visual confirmation of who it is? Who else could it be? Justin Wilson, the famed dead Cajun chef? Come on, you turn right, left, straight, then find some street parking. That's from Rob Ventura. Albert Chan in Aurora, Ontario. I've been idling outside your little house all week in my Subaru, hoping to deliver an egg salad sandwich on a roll to you, until I realized you were in Miami with Wilbon. Not to worry, I've kept it in my gym bag, stuffed in a locker until you return. Just text me when I should drop it off. Mm-hmm. The Magic Roundabout. This is from Orrin Hirsch. After your story about the experience of driving through the Chevy Chase Circle, with which I'm very familiar, the next time the show goes dark, perhaps you could send Nigel, in his role as I-Team correspondent, back to the UK to check out Swindon's Magic Roundabout, which is actually five separate smaller roundabouts supporting clockwise traffic, all situated around one larger central roundabout that runs counterclockwise. I haven't seen it myself, but the photos and videos I've seen make Chevy Chase and Westmoreland circles look quite tame. I've enclosed a link to a YouTube video to share with those who watch on News Channel 8. This looks fantastic and frightening beyond words.
Who has the right of way?
How does it work?
Where is it? Where's the roundabout?
It's in England.
England?
Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where roundabouts originated.
Yes.
Eric Hogan, Miami Beach, Florida. As a fellow Orange man and little, I went out to see the man himself in Miami. While at the Clevelander, I set myself up inside to say hello to Mr. Tony. I'm enjoying a beer. I see Wilbon walk in with security detail, and I think Tony can't be far behind. Another 15 minutes goes by and nothing. Then to my left, I see Wilbon come out of the elevator, and there is Mr. Tony. I can't give him the salute. He won't see me, and I'm at the bar. That would look weird, so what is one to do? Shout La Cheeserie. For a brief second, it seemed like I would get no response, and then it happened, a recognition and a sly smile, and then came, who said that? I was recognized. I asked him about the pot, and I was assured it would be back, but come on, you didn't want to do one out of the shoebox that Levitard works out of? No, I actually didn't. Michael McGillivray in Truro, Nova Scotia in Canada. Big fan of the pod and the PTI show since more than a decade. And yes, my wife hollers at the sound of your voice, so earbuds it is. I won a trip to the Super Bowl 54, and I too had a police escort to the game. It was total gangster. The one downside to the trip was I fractured my foot on the way to Miami. Picture me one-footing it up to section 351, row 20, seat 10, and in case you're wondering, it was a lot of hopping. Security and staff at Hard Rock Stadium were more than accommodating with their golf cart or wheelchair rides to complement my crutches, handiwork, and the game was almost as exciting as the ride there. Please give a shout out to the woman to whom I'm related to by marriage and the first of our two masculine children, as they allowed me to attend this event on both our respective 7th anniversary and his 4th birthday, February 2nd, 2020. Hope that you're back on the pod. Indeed, I am. John Barnes in Boyd's, Maryland. Let me add to the awesomeness of Sunday's palindrome. My son Jackson turned 20 on 02-02-2020. He was also born at 4:44 a.m., which is nice. Parenthetically, you are huge in Boyd's.
Good.
If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
We're not going to be sunk this year! We're the Stanley Cup champions! Yeah!
Still drunk.